Now, the first single, the very first single, was that 2016 or 2017?
I think it was 2016. I think it was...
I do too.
Half of 21st Street or something like that.
Yeah. So there you go. And then this is your, I'll do this in the announcer voice, your debut album. You're now all of 25 or 26, ancient, since you started all this.
I don't know how most songwriters experience it, but when I was in school, I was pretty quiet and I moved around a lot, so I didn't really know kind of where I fit in. And then I remember having this class where they said you could do whatever you like. And for some reason, I chose songwriting. And you got to do a term, which is, I don't know what you call it, a semester in on this subject. And yeah, I bought all these songwriting books and I started writing songs. And it was so strange, I think, for the teachers, because most of the kids picked like space or something tangible. And yeah, I started writing and it just became the thing that I did. It was like, I don't know, almost a religious experience. Every day I would sit down and I would start writing about whatever it was. And it was, I would have like a sense of when I had to write a song about something. Something little happened at school, something happened with my friends, or, you know, at soccer training, I don't know. And I would build up these little experiences and I'd be like, okay, that's a song experience. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to write this song because I want to talk to all these other people about my feelings or anything. I didn't want to play them to anyone. It was just like this thing that I did. And then by the time that was when I was 13, 14, when I was 18, 19 and starting, I'd already started to play a little bit. It was so interesting because I had it so smooth that I would just almost not think. It was just like I would be in class or wherever and I'd be like, this is a song time. And then that day I'd take an hour at nighttime and I'd make myself sit down and write the full song because I was like, you're going to be a nightmare if you don't finish this. And then tomorrow when you, I don't know, have class or whatever, you're not going to be focused. So just do the song tonight and then you're going to be much better at life. And so, yeah, it was really special to me from really young. And it wasn't ever, I don't know, it was really organic, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And yeah.
But it started as a class and a discipline, which is different than saying, oh, you know, I took piano lessons or guitar lessons when I was six. This was a free form class and you just picked it, probably again back to that word, out of curiosity, like, oh, I've never written a song. This sounds like a good, kind of a good, free, kind of interesting class. And you had no idea that that was going to... And by the way, this unravels something really important about the way that everybody portrays, you know, the way you've come to this. Well, she went to college, but then her career was heating up at the same time. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. How could her career be heating up if she was pursuing a university degree? And how did we, you know, where that doesn't come through very well in any of the things that I've read.
Yeah.
So it you know, this explains it to me.
Yeah. Well, I think it was interesting because it never, I'm always asked when was the switch? Like, when did you know that you were going to become a professional musician? And I've always said, I don't really know, because when I started, I was just doing the writing. And then when I got to 18, 19, I was like, I want to do this more. How do I do this more? I have to research about music industry. I have to research about where to play shows or which pubs have open mic nights. And can I get a part of this weird, there's this thing in Australia, I don't know if it's over there as well, where like they convince young artists to be a part of this pyramid scheme ticket selling thing. So you like, they're like, you can come and play at our event, but you have to sell 25 tickets. And then those tickets your friends have to each sell 10 tickets. And I didn't work it out until recently where I was like, oh, that was a scam. Like, that was a massive scam.
That's so funny.
And yeah, so I was a part of all those things. And then when I went over to Long Island, I was there on a soccer scholarship. So I was training every day. It was Div 2, so it was not like the big leagues scary, but it was still relatively serious. And like we were treated like we were professional athletes, which I think is good for people, but it was a lot of like responsibility that I'd never had before. And I was also away from my parents and my family and my friends, so I got to be in this little bubble across the other side of the world where I played all these pyramid scheme gigs and open mic nights and stuff. But now I was in a place where it's so much better for learning to play shows to be away from those people that mean the most to you, because they're the ones, you know, feel the most embarrassed for you if you mess up, or they feel the most worried for you if you are a bit nervous when you go on stage, and you can see it in their face. And so it just puts an extra amount of pressure. And I got to kind of just jump away from that for 4 months every 6 months, and it was perfect for me. And while I was over there, I sent email upon email upon email to blogs, probably to people like you, to like everyone, and said, hey, I'm a musician, like, can you listen to my song, can you give me feedback, and hey, I'm looking for a manager or whatever. And I did that since I was 16, but I think because of the time difference as well, probably, I'd just sit there in our study room for hours and hours at nighttime, and it would be daytime in Australia, and send out these emails. And eventually I was like, oh, okay, I'll get a producer. And then I started working with a producer, and then things started piecing together all the years of looking at the music industry and how it works. It was like, oh, okay, you've recorded this with this person. You need a radio person. You need a publicist. You need a manager. You need a booking agent. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. And suddenly, like, lots of these people, I was meeting them in my Christmas break. And then I won a competition, not a music competition, like a music industry school competition to go to Splendor in the Grass. And so I went there and I met all these more people, and then when I came back to America, it was my final semester. It was my senior year. So I guess that I graduated 2017, and then it would have been 2016. We'd already released two songs. They'd gone okay. And then Already Home came out, and I'm pretty sure when I got to America, my managers came on board like the week before or something like that. So I was just like thrown back into school. I'm pretty sure there was a snowstorm, so I got stuck in LA for 3 days because New York was so snowed in that I had to stay in this random family's house in LA, like in the valley or something. And they were really nice to me, but it was so surreal, and they were very paranoid about me being like out in LA. So I just stayed in their house, and I was getting all this info that like I was going to get a publishing deal, and I understood but didn't understand. And then they were like, you're going to sign with Universal Publishing, you get an advance and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds good. And then they were like, so Triple J are going to play your song and you're going to do a big interview. And I was like, oh. And to Australian kids and musicians growing up, Triple J is the holy grail. I'd had like one or two plays with the other songs, but then it suddenly was 10 plays in a week. And I was like, oh, that's different. And it would come up on my Twitter while I was in class. And I remember being in like a differential calculus class or something like that, and just being like, oh, I'm on the radio in Australia, and saying it to my friend. And she was just like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm on the radio in Australia. And she was just like, oh, that's cool. And so no one really was giving me any feedback that they understood what was happening at home. Even when I tried to explain it to them, they were just, it was just, yeah, it just wasn't tangible.
You were going to go and pursue it in Australia when you were right here, and you could have, you know, signed people theoretically in the big United States and not have to conquer the United States from that little country that you come from.
Well, I tried. I looked up lots of people, and I think, yeah, my main achievement in America for me is like my mini self-managed artist thing was getting shows in New York. And they were really small shows, but they were so important for me.
Where'd you play? Did you play like pianos or?
I played pianos 3 times.
Right.
And I played the bitter end twice.
How did you know so young how to vet somebody who's a manager? How did you know that, you know, because that you can't quite read in a book. So did you just find somebody that you actually thought wasn't full of it and that actually they liked your music?
Yeah, I was really, really lucky. I was put in contact with this woman, Martine Cotton, who runs this website called Music Industry Inside Out. And it's an Australian website where they pick someone in the music industry to do a little interview. So I watched every single one. I went back and like watched managers, booking agents, everything. So I had almost a scope of what everyone did and who were the main kind of people, at least that Martine knew. And then when I won this competition to go to Splendor in 2016, kind of knew some of the people, and I'd also had a message from my current manager, Bill, and I was meant to meet up with him in a couple of weeks or something like that. And I knew that he managed Paul Kelly, and Paul Kelly was like my childhood hero.
You ended up with Bill?
Yeah, I'd emailed Bill's company. So Mel Cheng also works with Bill, who also manages me now. And said, I've got this song and it's called I Believe in Music. And I wrote it when I was, I think, 15 or 16 or something. And I said, can you play it to Paul? And they said,
oh, wow.
We sent it to him. He thought it was really cute. And that was one of the big things, like one of my little manager achievements. I remember just being like, wow, that's really cool. Let's keep going. And it was, when it got to that Splendor in the Grass thing, I met a bunch of people. I met lots of people working in labels, and I met my other manager now, Kathy. And I didn't even tell any of them that I was a musician because it just didn't feel like the right thing to say. And they so took me under their wing. They had no idea who I was, like this little random blonde kid that was friends with someone, but we'll just take her to the next show. And we'd go and watch Catfish in the Bottleman, and everyone would be like, oh, Alex, so what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, I play soccer in America. And they'd be like, oh, that's nice. And they'd be like, who the f*** is she? I eventually told Kathy, like, yeah, I do music. And she was like, oh, I would love to see you play. And I got a music booking agent on Billboard, and he'd organized this show, and all the managers, Joe came along, and then Bill and Kathy both came to the show, and they were in combat kind of, and I didn't realize this. I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know you picked one manager. And Kathy said, I'm really interested in managing you, but I think Bill is as well. And I know that he manages Paul Kelly, and that's one of your favorites. So I'm not going to press you, and I think you should take your time to decide. So I went home and like Googled everything about both of them. Kathy had managed Angus and Julia Stone through their peak, and like lots of amazing artists. She'd worked in the music industry for a really long time, and she'd just achieved so much. And same with Bill. So I did the pros and cons. I didn't even really have any cons for either of them.
Not worth hiding. You've got this full-length record now.
Yes.
And yet people spend a lot of time making sure you wear that as a badge.
Yes.
Now, as someone who, admittedly, I'm straight, but people over the years, when you're an artistic person, people are like, I wonder. I have to tell you that, you know, I am so deeply radical in everything I do, whether it's BLM or whether it's LG, da-da-da-da-da, right? So I want to approach this a different way. Was the point of that song the fact that it was a coming out party, or was the point of that song that it was a great song and that it kind of got you your attention? Because everybody is wearing that as, people wear that as a badge for you, and I don't think you wear it as a badge.
I don't, because it's a deeply painful experience, and I think that's the thing that gets confused. And I had this whole system that I told you about, that I'd write songs about different things. that were important to me that I felt like I understood enough to write a song about. And I think that's the tipping point. Like, that's where I would know I had to write the song, because I'd be like, oh, this is the idea of what's happening here. And then I'd go and write it. And I wrote that song when I was about, I think, 21. And it was, yeah, it was just a recount of such a long time of painful, private experience. I wrote lots of versions of the song, and the version that made the most sense to me was like a letter to my 16-year-old self. And I remember being in school and kind of coming to realize that something was off, and I didn't know what it was, but I just was different from the other kids in my class in this specific way, but I could never put my finger on it. So I always felt this painful separation from the other kids, and those comments that people make chip away at you, the homophobic comments that I remember from when I was really small. You kind of don't forget all those things. So I guess the trauma of all of it caught up with me, and I was in a place where, I don't know, I was writing songs about things that were meaningful to me, and I just knew that that was a song that I had to write, because it was as much a message to me that as it was to other people. And yeah, it ended up being recorded, and I didn't really think much of it. It wasn't going to be, I don't know, it was just one of the songs that I'd written in a sequence of songs.
It wasn't designed to be your, yeah, it wasn't designed to be your anthem that everybody suddenly uses it as.
No, and I did say to my friends, I think this is probably going to be one of the most important songs that I write. I think deep trauma and pain, if people can look at that and build it into something else and something expressive, it can be far more deep reaching, even for people that are straight or people, because it goes to a deeper place in the person. And so you can connect to that deeper thing. Whereas, I don't know, some other subjects, you can't go as deep on that.
You struck a balance from a really slick, really well-produced, really mature record. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to show you some of the F-ups. I'm going to show you a bit of the humanity, so you don't think I'm coming out of the gate with this full length as a fully formed, you know, human being.
Yeah, I think the reason I called it The Theory of Absolutely Nothing is because the only thing that I've worked out is that the Einstein thing of the more you know, the less you understand. And that is kind of definitely what I understood with making this record. And with songs like I Like to Dance, me and my friend Nora produced that on our own. So it's the first time that I'd ever been a producer. And there were moments on the record, like with I Think You're Great, that song was recorded in 3 hours. I just had it in my back pocket, and we had an extra day of or half day of recording, and Sam and Dan, who are from Ballpark, were like, why don't we just play it? And we played it, and I was like, it doesn't got a third verse or anything. Like, it's just two verses and a chorus. Surely I should write something else. And they're like, nah, let's just do it. And so we recorded it within like, yeah, a couple of hours. And so like me on the record saying like, it's a fun song. Like Sam going, you're a genius. Thank you. It's like, it was just what happened on the day. And I think you want to get those things across to the listener, because it's important to know how much fun the artist is having, or like the other little bits, like piece it together. And you're like, because if you're making a big thing, like someone's sitting there, you have to break it up like you would in a normal show, I think, sometimes, and like have those lulls and have those peaks and have the kind of stuff in the middle and the comedic breaks and stuff like that.
You're the opposite of mincing words, obviously. So how do you think that got into your head? Back to Paul Kelly, because Paul Kelly is more of an economizer, I would say. Would you not?
Definitely. I think that economizer skill definitely, I don't know, came into my brain. Or I definitely learned that from people like Paul or people like Courtney. And I think maybe Paul uses less words, but he says so much in them. And same with Courtney. And the little details that she includes, like saying depressed and where she talks about the little sugar cups or something like that. And that lyric is the difference. Or there's a couple of lyrics in that song. They're all brilliant, but there's just a couple of little moments where you're like, oh my God, yeah, I am with you standing in the room now. I was outside the house and thinking about something else, but now I'm absolutely standing behind you and I can feel the weight of this song. And I think that little skill is the thing I learned from Paul. And I think sometimes I include more words because I'm like, I just don't think I've brought the person to stand next to me yet. I don't think that they quite are right here. And that's why I do that.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. Okay. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then in between, I can play anything you tell me to. And there are no rules. There are no genres. It's 40 minutes of solid segued music.